discusses the mitzvah of kriyas, mitzvah of din, the kavel of kol hashanayim, the Rambam emphasizes that what is meant by that is Talmud Torah. Every time a person learns Torah, they're involved in the old, the yoke aspect of accepting upon yourself the authority of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the Torah. In what sense? So the Rambam says, because you have to be willing, and I want to read it directly inside. In other words, the study of Torah is an ecstatic metaphysical performance. The study of Torah is an act of surrender. That is why Chazal stressed so many times the importance of humility, and that the proud person can never be a great scholar, only the humble person. Why is humility necessary? Because the study of Torah means meeting the Almighty. And if a finite being like us meets the infinite, the Almighty, the maker of the world, of course this meeting must precipitate a mood of humility, and humility results in surrender. What is it that we surrender? We surrender two things. First, we surrender to the logic. We surrender to the Almighty the everyday logic, or what I call the American Pie logic. Now, what's American Pie logic? I have no idea. I think this is a transcription that I think they got that wrong. When I listened to the tape, I listened to this sheer. I think what he said is mercantile. The guy heard it as American Pie. But everyone says what mercantile means. It means what he then, it fits with what he says afterwards. The logic of the businessman or the utilitarian person. Right? We're not just interested in that type of logic. We embrace another logic, the logic misina, which means we're basically you're surrendering to the emes of Torah, whether you feel comfortable with it or not. So I don't want to go into it. You can read this whole thing, it's really fascinating. Anyone who wants the whole transcript of that shiur, I'm happy to share it with you, because it's really incredible. In fact, if we had a lot of time, I would have played it for you. Okay, I did it for the high school class. It's a very powerful. Yeah, I don't know if it's available on my Torah, because it's an old tape. I mean, I have a tape. Maybe we can do that during the final. But the bottom line point here is that before we start this topic, I always like to get this out, that we might not feel comfortable at the end of the day or feel satisfied with what we determine is the emes. Nevertheless, it's Kabbalah Zalman Hishamar.
Didn't we spend part of the time last Wednesday talking about how there is an ethic outside of Torah? So how does that fit into this whole scheme of Rambam?
Well, there is an ethic outside of Torah, but our conclusion, right, was that there is an ethic outside but really within all along. And what does it mean outside of Torah? It's outside of the Ikar HaDin, but it's within Lifni Meshura Sadin. And Lifni Meshura Sadin is as much as an obligation on us as Ikar HaDin. As a matter of fact, to need to go Lifni Meshura Sadin is Kabbalah's Olam HaShamayim. It's a great example of it, because you're being obligated to do things that are beyond just the straight and narrow, just. You're obligated to go beyond the letter of the law. You're obligated to go the Chumrah. Basically, that's what that ethic is, right? In other words, you need to, let's say, when you're able to circumvent the halacha, but you're doing something that you intuitively know to be incorrect, you're obligated not to do it. You're obligated to go to Kibbutz Shiras Adin. That was the ethic that's beyond Torah, which is really within it. In what sense, if it's really within it, in what sense is it beyond? That was the question we had at the end. Why are we calling it beyond Torah if it's really within Torah? So the answer we gave was because it's very different in one very important regard, flexibility. Ikar HaDin has no flexibility. When we determine something's the halakha, it doesn't matter circumstances at all, it doesn't matter if we're dealing with a poor person or a rich person, we got to follow the Ikar HaDin. But when you're in the realm of Lifni Meshura HaDin, that realm beyond, there's a subjectivity, a flexibility that enters the scheme. Whereas I can now have a different psak for a poor person and a different psak for a rich person. Either way, it's all within the Torah.
Right.
So one thing, when you go into Lifni Meshura HaDin, you can't contradict the Torah. So we determined that it's Asur to Kal Shabbat. I hear where you're going. Text it. It's the question. It's the main point that those that write on this topic, and you're going to see them in a minute, I have them in this little piece. They want to evoke this idea. Exactly what you're saying. All right. So that was one starting point, is I wanted us to just realize, my starting point, I'll talk for myself. I'm a big believer in what Rav Soloveitchik promotes in this shir, which is that there are times, you know, you try your best, that you always want to understand that everything has to make sense. And you're obligated to make an effort to make every bit of Torah make sense to you. But there will be times that you're going to have to surrender. There's going to be times when it's not going to make it all the way to fit with your sensitivities and with your own emotional sort of assumptions about what is right and what is wrong. So that's one starting point for me. Whether you choose it as an individual to accept it, you have to think about it. The second starting point is that I think it's an absolute axiom. It's please suffer that Judaism is a universalist religion. It is not a chauvinistic religion, as are others. It isn't like, let's say, Islam, where the ultimate in Islam is that everyone has to become a Muslim or you're in trouble. And many parts of Christianity are the same way. Judaism is very comfortable with everybody retaining their own religious beliefs as long as they're living in God. It doesn't need everyone to become Jewish, number one. And is ultimately the ultimate philosophy of Judaism is concerned for everyone in the world, not just Jews. Right? The one, many commentators make this point. The one gets lost in some of the polemics and some of the harsh things that people say sometimes, right? Temporary times and times of persecution. But if you read, like Rav Hirsch, I think is like one of the major exponents of universalism. So he says, he always laid great stress on the fact that the election of Israel as the chosen people does not mean either a separation from or looking down on the rest of mankind. From its very inception, universalism was inherent to Judaism. And those interested, you could look, Dayan Grunfeld in his introduction to Chorev, which is Rav Hirsch's book, on all the mitzvahs and the Talmud and the mitzvahs, he gets into that a little more and explores that whole thing. If you want, there's many essays written by Rav Hirsch and many others, that Judaism is not the kind of religion that will be prejudicial. So my two axioms are, I might be comfortable, and no matter what we say, Judaism is not prejudicial.
So how do we explain Judaism universality to, I think you were a Buddhist?
So what the ones are. Right. So it doesn't tolerate anything but monotheism, in that sense. And it doesn't look at a Hindu who's over the Mazar any differently than a Jew who's over the Mazar, other than the Jews worse. We'll look more askance on the Jews over the Mazar than the Nachmanides even. Right? So that's not a prejudicial thing. Right? It just, you know, there's a certain absolute principles that we want. One of them is monotheism. The other one is general morality and ethics, too. Right? We're going to start to talk about different types of non-Jews. And we'll get to a ger toshav versus a non-ger toshav. Right? Ger toshav is going to be someone certainly shown in are understood to say you can be mechal shabbos for your generation, which can't be mechal shabbos to the other non-Jews. So, it's interesting. So what's a ger toshav? We'll see how that holds up. But what's a ger toshav? So ger toshav has machlokes rishonim. It's either someone who's a monotheist, period. Or it's somebody who is, it's really three, there's kind of three opinions. Monotheism alone, just don't be a little bit. Shomer, Sheva, Mrs. Benoah, all of them. Or you're a moral ethical person, that's the main year you kind of says that. You're an ethical moral person. So we'll see now, though, that at the end of the day, do we treat the ger toshav as different, or do we treat the others? We have to see. But universalist in the sense that when we say we're the chosen people, that's what it's really responding to. When we say we're the chosen people, it doesn't mean that we are the chosen, we're the only ones that are really going to be going to Olam Haba, that the whole purpose of creation is just for us. Is that really it? Some people understand it that way, but it's not really meant that way. We're chosen, right? We're chosen for a role. But the ultimate purpose of creation was not just for Jewish people, it was for the entire world. That's what universalism means.
Aren't there other religious thinkers, perhaps more controversial than the Rav, that posit the idea that the minute that what's eternal in the Torah are certain values, prophetic values, like being compassionate, being loving, kind, and once Halakha ceases to reflect those values as reflected by the society we live in, then Halakha needs to change and evolve, rather than us saying we need to submit to Halakha that doesn't.
It sounds a little like
Eliezer Berger.
And also I was going to say Yitz Greenberg.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, so, yeah, they do say that. Mm-hmm. But what's the connection? So you're saying it could be, at the end of the day,
if you say
this would be a prime example, right? So of where perhaps halakha needs to be adjusted.
Right, I'm saying, so that you take that approach as well.
So, do I take that approach?
Never.
Absolutely never. The Rav never did that.
I'm saying, I guess what would be your response to
that? I'm not sure that that's an orthodox approach at all. In other words, I think that might be. In other words, we have to define this better. It's not exactly our topic, but the but if we could get into that discussion, which I'm happy to do, but we'll give it only a minute. I think that the danger of that type of approach is that the whole thing falls apart. Because it'll become, if there isn't an absolute value to Allah, to Din. So what you're talking about is basically what will dictate the value set? Contemporary society? That's a historical view. That's conservative Judaism. If you say that it's
value, underlying values,
oh, so then you're getting a little to what Norm was saying, right? In other words, what if it's the Chinuch Rasadin? You determine the Chinuch Rasadin, right? But one thing that at least Rav Aaron's presentation of the Chinuch Rasadin never allows for is to conflict, contradict the Ikar Din. You can always go; it has to go beyond this, but it can't contradict. So the problem is we're not just doing something; it's going beyond it because it seems more moral. At the same time, we're being Chal Shabbos. That's the problem. Chilul Shabbos is
this one thing, like we have slaves. Like we're allowed to have slaves, at least early on in the Torah permits that. And in a way that was more ethical than slavery like in Egypt.
That's an understatement.
Right, it's much more ethical. But now having slaves the way that we were allowed to then, it would be highly unethical. So
I don't know about that. In other words, if somebody has a debt, right? They owe money, they stole money, whatever it is, they owe money, and they can't pay it, and they want to pay it off by working for you, which is basically what the institution really was, right? It seems that might not be so unethical. Right, so... These are not our topics, they're good questions, but I'm not afraid of them. Nebuchadnezzar.
I thought it was related. Just
I'll give you the start of the answer. Nebuchadnezzar is an opportunity. In other words, does somebody become a Nebuchadnezzar because we go and grab them? How does someone become a Nebuchadnezzar? Looking from the perspective of the Nebuchadnezzar, the coerced, forced labor, where we chain them up, bring them in the boat, and reserve them, and say, yes, that is his decision. Now, why would he do it? Why would he do it?
Definitely.
He didn't do it. Sometimes it'd be economic. You know what part of the thing is? It's a route towards conversion.
Did they choose to be?
I mean, Indies a couple hundred years back. Like,
how did once they're in the market, you can certainly buy them.
That's not to enforce.
Well, how did they get in the market in the first place?
Okay. Probably take time
after. Wait a second. Why do you mean
that? No, we're assuming.
No.
I'm trying to bring an example of a slave that was forced. And that Jews were able to own, assume.
No, basically what would happen is, I mean, once we're going to have a is going to be our topic. Yeah. So clearly, once they're on the market, so they're property, they're one owner who owns them for whatever time period can then sell them to another person. Now, if they want to get out of it, they can't get out. They can be the guy or the leader, Jewish. Well, he has to affect it. But any good Jew would do it. Would a good Jew stop a person who's a half Jew from becoming a full Jew? I don't think so. The Mishnah is disgusting. And let's say there's the famous Mishnah of the two people that have half and half ownership. So certainly the Mishnah is fair, so one frees up the other town. Can't exist in the half state. But the Gemara says that most of them want to stay there. They have a certain chaos, light. Right? If you learn through the Sugyas, you gotta be careful. You can't just take superficial ideas. It's not, I don't mean to insult them. We can't go through now the whole Sugya of that account. But I'm telling you that the proper way to do it. These are legitimate questions that, that are very appropriate to ask. But what we would need to do is to start with something from the beginning and go through and get a real realistic picture of what exactly is the institution that we've got. I have confidence that at the end of the day, if there were elements in it that didn't sit well with my sense of morality, I would still be Kabbalah Zola Chalchamayim. That's a given. But nevertheless, what I found in these type of issues is that I'm generally satisfied when I've explored. I don't want to go into the whole ethics about anything. We're having a hard enough time with this. Believe me, this is going to be controversial.
Right,
this is worse.
A different approach.
This is on the surface worse than it as a challenge to morality. We're saying that we let somebody die, right? So let's
right,
get this
going. Are there any other views opposed to
the Kabbalah Shemayim?
Just simply.
There's generally views, but I don't think
that's not
they're not orthodox. I don't think there is. I think you, you know, if you're gonna, you know, I think that if you were all solutions. So we didn't get anywhere yet, so don't worry.
All right,
let's move forward a little bit. Turn to page 2. We're going to see people with sentiments similar to yours. I mean, assuming that you guys have sentiments, which I do too. I want you know, I got into this topic because how much it bothered me. That's what generated my interest.
Could you say the axioms again?
Two axioms are, at the end, at least, and now again, I'm not forcing these axioms on you. These are the axioms to me. My axiom, we're talking about being Machal Shabbos for a non-B'nai Bris, which is what the title of this should be. Non-B'nai Bris. So that we keep it. Number one, there are times when, you know, it pays always to search for the truth. We want to understand something to its utmost, but if we are not satisfied at the end, one of the starting points for me is I nevertheless, if it's a halacha, I have to accept it. And number two is that I will always maintain, no matter what we do here, that Judaism is a universalist religion. It is not a religion that thinks that the Jews are the special people that the world is created for to the detriment of everybody else. Those, to me, are two starting points. Now, we have to then make sense of our issue, right? How is it that there can be such a notion that you're not going to be Michal Shabbos to save the life of a non believer? So I want you to see two approaches that I felt were done incorrectly. They did not search for the emes. They were not makabal of HaShemayim. And my setup is to warn against these approaches. I think they were incorrect. Approach number one was something I came across in the AOA journal.
Why would you cross off the name?
Because I'm not going to say nice things about it. Meaning, I got to tell you a funny story. Do you want to hear a funny story? I once gave a talk on this topic in a shul, and it was moving a little more rapidly than this, but I got to this point where I was going to critique this piece, and I started saying things, and then right before I was about to say what I thought of the person, I'll tell you, I was doing a mistake. I was about to say, the person who wrote this thing, in my view, was interested in winning an essay contest and getting some prize at the expense of a tremendous scholarship. He put into print the same thing that Delegate did in the New York Times. This is a topic that is a serious topic that needs to be discussed, that it's okay to ask questions about, but it is not meant for global sort of exposure. It isn't a good thing. It can only cause trouble. So I really felt that he was incorrect in writing this essay, let alone in his methodology for drawing his conclusions. So I was about to say all this, and even worse, when it just hit me to ask, I said the name, and I said, does anyone know this guy? So the person raised his hand, it was him. Oh, it was him himself. So fortunately, I didn't rip him like I was going to. He was there. He was the guy.
Hey, nice to meet you. Great article.
I said, you're kidding. But it was really him. And he actually, I want you to know, stood up afterwards and made a whole apology for writing it. He was young. He was in medical school at the time. This was like...
Did he consider himself a bro?
Yeah. He was, you know, member of the shul. I gave the shiur. And he... He says that he was young and rash and idealistic and not very versed in our local system, and he thinks that he made a mistake right, publicly said. What was the big mistake he made? So I'll tell you, it all comes down to three words. If you look, you can read the whole thing on your own, but if you look towards the right side there, that last column, I underlined three words twice. Everyone see the words I underlined? Or maybe not on your version. It looks like I didn't do it on your version at all. Look at that column, and it says, in examining this problem, I have discovered there to be sufficient grounds within Jewish tradition for such a philosophy, one that is consonant with the principles of equal treatment for all, regardless of race, religion, and creed. In other words, what he does is he reviews this topic and decides that he has discovered something that was unknown to all Rishonim and Achronim that preceded him. And that is a little audacious. That's a little bit too much.
I agree with you.
I have discovered. Those were the words.
Very humble guy.
Yes, so that's what leads into being a little too arrogant in taking such a claim. And basically, he develops his own theory that he sees that Tzelem Elokim is the factor that should determine who we can be Mechal Shalom for, right? Which we all big chachma there. I would love that to be true too. I think so too. I think a good moral Tzelem Elokim person, I should be saving their life a little bit.
That's Reform theology.
So. Yeah. That was his determination, and he tried to prove it in a certain way. And, you know, anyone who wants to pull out it, let me know. I have that also. But not the way to go. We don't find the MS in Torah by bringing in our own original ideas. Not necessarily. The other approach was by a musmach of YU, right lower. I went to a shir of his. Very nice guy, actually. A good friend of mine. I produced with him for a year. And he gave a talk on this topic. And what he did was, he at least stuck to Rishon and Achron. But what he did is he chose the Das Yochid. We're going to see one opinion, the famous opinion of the Me'iri. The Me'iri is going to define all the halachos that seem prejudicial within Shas towards non-Jews as always being only referring to an Obed Avodah Zarah. It's not referring to the non-Jews of our time, right? So the Me'iri would also play out in this context. That if the person is an Obed Avodah Zarah, okay, I can't be Mechal Shabbos for them. But anyone else, I can. So the problem with that is that also is not the way the law system works. We can't. I wish it worked that way also sometimes, but it isn't the way it works, and we got to go with the majority of authorities. So we're not going to be using either of those two approaches. What are we going to do? Page 3.
Okay, can you really read
the
Me'iri
one more time? Right. The Me'iri has an approach. There are many other Gemaras in Shas that deal with halachos in a less than positive way when it comes to akum. That's the expression that's used. It's akum. And the question that always comes up is the Gemara telling me this halacha applies to all non-Jews?
Okay, or just
Obed Avodah Zarah. The Me'iri says, it's only Obed Avodah Zarah. All the other Rishonim would say, no, I remember I ran into Rabbi Bleich once in the library, and I just wanted to get, I knew he would have some interesting reaction to this question. So I ran into the library, I said, what do you think of the Me'iri? And he felt very strongly that it was a corruption, even of the Me'iri. He didn't buy it at all. But anyway, needless to say, what are we going to do? So we're going to do what it says on page 3. Oh, by the way, the top of page 3 is more from the AOA essay article, where you see his theory about Tzelem Elokim and the erroneous proof he brings in. This is one of the most distorted stories. On the left side, top, is a story of quoting Rabbi Soloveitchik on this issue. And it's kind of like misquoted. This I asked people that were at the time, were at this place where this story is taking place, eyewitnesses who denied its truth. So it was another thing that disturbed me about his own, that it was contriving something that was a rumor that was not true. He was promoting it.
He used it as a proof.
He used it that Rav Soloveitchik agreed with his theory. Right? So the one that I ran this by, let's just turn this off for a second because I don't know if I have permission to say this. This topic is something that you discuss with any peers, unless you have no choice. Right? Sometimes that's what happens. Like when the New York Times article came out, I was forced to discuss this with a lot of people. It's very uncomfortable. It's very hard to explain the intricacies of halacha and get them to buy an explanation that I'm going to try to get you to buy. It's going to be harder to get you guys to buy what I'm going to say, let alone to people that are totally not familiar with halakhic process or philosophy of halakha. So, all right, now with all that extended, overly extended introduction, let's get to halakha lesson. Here it is, second hand. The Gemara begins with the following. Kodesh Zara, the Mishnah says, simple one. Everybody see what the Mishnah is? Number one. I hope these are numbered well. Please tell me the Gemara. Yes, good. Number one. Bas Yisroel lo tiyaled es haovedes kochavim midei shemeyaledes ben laavodes kochavim. What does that mean? A Jewish woman, a Jewish midwife, should not facilitate the delivery of a ovedes kochavim because you are giving birth and raising somebody into ovedes kochavim. Okay, good. Now, this din is probably talking about specifically an Oved Kochav. Not all non-Jews, but this is the issue here, is the issur of enhancing, raising, facilitating more of Avodah Zarah in the world. Okay? Then, if you go down to number two, there's a stira. Wait a second. The Mishnah said, I'm not allowed to do it. I'm not allowed to help a non-Oved Avodah Zarah give birth. V'rminu, Yehudis mi'aledis, Oved Kochav, v'mischar, there's a brisa that says, guess what? Now this is a real opening for an anti-Semite, right? It says, you are allowed to deliver the Ovedes Kochavim as long as it's for money, but not for free. Ooh. So what is that? Right? What's the message there? What do you think it means? Why is that true?
Where is that?
Number two. See where is it number two down there? Okay. Viraminu, we have a stira to our Mishnah. A Jew is allowed as long as it's for money. So, how do we make sense of this? Let me tell you it outside so we can pick up the pace. The answer is like this. Really, all things being equal, you should never do it. However, what are we worried about?
If it's your job, they might hate you.
Ava is going to be the important expression. What does Ava mean? We throw it around so loosely all the time, and you're going to hear it all the time. But here's where it comes from. This is the sugi of Ava. Ava means hatred. Sinas chinam. We don't want the non-Jews to hate us. So therefore, you can do it for money, but you can't do it for free. Does that make sense? I can fix that up a little.
Like if it's your job, you can't discriminate. But if you're doing it for as a favor, you shouldn't do it.
No. Anyone have another idea? Listen, we don't want baseless hatred. We're really not supposed to be doing this at all, because you're not supposed to be raising up little Ovi the mothers are. However, because of Ava, you do it under certain conditions. So obviously it means that only when you're doing it for money is there a situation of Ava. When you're doing it for free, there isn't a situation of Ava. Why? Because I can just give a good excuse. I can't afford it. I don't do these things for free. I need a livelihood. So I don't have time to do your delivery. I have to do other deliveries where they're going to pay me. But if you're being paid, you can't say that. So you have no choice but to do it. So Mishum Ava, I'm allowed to do this. So far, so good. Ava's a useful entity. Of course, it won't be necessarily ethically satisfying to do it, but that's going to be what's going to generate our hector for the
city. I'm just curious, how does that work halachically, though? Because if there is an issue of creating more for the start, that seems to be maybe a terrorist or something. Mm-hmm. So how, because of Ava, does that, like...
Can't be the rest.
Okay, so I'm...
You just gave the argument to be shown, yeah, that this is the Nidra Mama. Right? That, in other words, that's their proof. You said it very well. If this were the Rasa, then you couldn't just start. You said it brilliantly well, you'll see in a minute. We are not Matir the Rasas because of it. Okay? That's going to be very important for us. And let me just finish up this little sugya. The Gemara continues. So, Amar Rav Yosef, Bishar, Shari, Mishum, Eva. Good. Sabar Rav Yosef, Lememar. And then Rabbi Yosef thought he'd take it a little further. You know what he wanted to say? This is talking about not Shabbos, but a weekday, right? Any day of the week. Rabbi Yosef wanted to take it further. Uludi obetz kochavim b'shapsa b'schar shari mishum Eva. He said, you know, let me take this further. I see Eva as a mechanism that allows me to do things I'm normally not allowed to do. Maybe you can allow me to deliver this baby on Shabbos. because I'm worried about baseless hatred. So the Gemara says, Amar Le Abaye, no. On Shabbos, I have a way out. I have a way out of the Eva on Shabbos. What's my way out? Yochla Lameimar La Didan Deminatri Shabsa Mechalalina Alayu. Didchu Delo Minatri Shabsa Lo Mechalalina. What does that mean? It means, if it's Shabbos, you can get out of the whole thing and not cause any Eva. Listen to this. You will not cause any hatred if you just say to them like this, look, I'm a Jew. I have certain rules on Shabbos. I'm allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for other people that follow those rules. But people that don't follow the rules of Shabbos, I'm not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos. And guess what? You say that, there's no Eva. That, in the times of the Gemara, was a completely legitimate, acceptable statement to make in the eyes of the non-Jews. Otherwise, the Gemara wouldn't be saying. This is just that this was the analogy to Rabbi Chalap's situation, right? It's exactly the kind of thing he said. But, and that's what we had to think of. He's such a brilliant Talmud Chacham. He knew the Sugya, so he said, let's give it a shot. Now, what do you think? How would this go over? Let's imagine the scenario that we're talking about. I'm in the ICU. I'm there on Shabbos because a lot of Jews are there. I'm being Mechal Shabbos for them. Suddenly, there's a cardiac arrest for the non-Jew. And they say, all right, where's the cardiologist? Get him over there. Well, we don't know how to use these paddles or what's going on with this. The kid's in, like, defib. So I say, excuse me, I can't defibrillate because that would involve people's Shabbos. And I don't think he's Shomer Shabbos. And I go to Mechal Shabbos for people that are Shomer Shabbos. You think that would be acceptable? Absolutely not. Right? Absolutely not. So this might have worked back then, but isn't going to work for us. We'll get back to it. What's going to work for us. But in the meantime, what does Eva do? How far does Eva go? Does Eva get you out of Yisurei Daraisa? That becomes the question. What is the implication of this Gemara? Gemara says like this. It says, Rav Yosef wanted to use Eva to allow for the delivery of the non-Jewish baby, the Aveda of the Zara baby, on Shabbos. But we said, no, you can't do it. Not because Eva can't allow you to do it, but you don't need it, isn't any Eva. There's a way around the Eva. You can come up with a different excuse. What's the implication? That maybe Eva would have worked. Right? So that's what bothers Tosfos. If you look at the Tosfos on the side, we're immediately on the table, he says. He says this exact point. He says, whoa. And this Tosfos is the major source for our very machmir approach to this whole sugya. This Tosfos says, don't think for a minute that Eva will ever allow you to be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. Absolutely not. We must be talking about a case. He says, the scenario here is the delivery of a baby that doesn't involve Chil Shabbos Daraisa. Right? What is it about a delivery that there's Chil Shabbos Daraisa? Anybody know? What malach am I doing?
Separating?
Heating the water.
Good. Gozes. Who knows what Gozes means?
Really?
Not separating exactly.
Hearing.
Close.
I appreciate that.
You're in Sidur de Pas.
Hearing.
Filtering.
What is Gozes?
Cutting water to the nail or hair off or something in the body.
Good. It means cutting something that is omed minota, something that is meant to be taken out. Right? Something okir dama mikidula. Taking something from where it's grown.
You're allowed to do that.
So, no, it's malach.
You're allowed to be packaging it.
No, this is something that's naturally.
But what's the water?
If it's falling in the rafa.
What's the water?
The rafa is a room.
Right, so actually, as Tosa says, we must be talking about a case where it's already, when he says Yoshiba Mishmash, it means it's detached. Whatever it is, it's detached. Don't worry about the details. The bottom line is, Tosfos has to go out of his way to say the suki is talking about a Dindar Obama. And then it becomes the Homachlokis. You know what Homachlokis Rishon is? Can you even use Eva to be over on Chil Shabbos Derabbanan? It could be that you need it to be a low level Derabbanan. Or no Derabbanan at all. We're going to pass through the Kula on this. Then Eva allows you to do Derabbanan, but there's a strong Shita that doesn't even allow you to do that. One thing's for sure, it does not allow you to be over on Yisrael Derabbanan. If somebody says to you, what's the reason you're not going to Chil Shabbos to say anybody on Shabbos? Eva is not the answer. It's just not the answer. Everyone thinks it is, it's definitely.
So, why can't we say it's sakana? Sakana is the process for the...
For who?
For the woman.
For not Jew?
The woman who's giving birth.
She's not Jewish.
But
our starting point is
all point.
We are not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for someone.
I thought your case was just in general for. I know the Jewish non-Jewish thing. I thought you were saying like what's our reason, just in general, for Jew or non-Jew alike, why we wouldn't be able to. So I'm saying why.
In general, you would be allowed to if it was a Jew. You certainly would be allowed to do it because of Sukkot Nefashos. Being as it's not.
So just your point is that we're not using Ava.
Correct. Ava is not going to be what we're going to use. I'm going to tell you the ending of the story is going to be that I am Mechal Shabbos equally. This is my personal approach, even for Jews and non-Jews. The Maisa, the Raisa, the everything. How did we get to this? What allows me to do that? I told you I was searching for the truth. Kabbalah Zalm Ruch HaShemayim, the whole deal. I gave you my big, impressive intro. So we have to find out how on earth I'm doing.
What's the original Isur? You're not allowed to do it. That's a din d'oraisa or a
We assumed it was d'oraisa. We thought it was d'oraisa. The underlying delivering a baby was a Isur d'oraisa. If it is an Isur d'oraisa, the implication.
No, I'm asking that question for Shabbat. Just in the mission of the Isur.
Oh, nothing to do with Shabbat. It was just it's delivering. A baby that will ultimately grow up to be over the
right, but is that
Durabon?
It's a Durabon. So, my question on Tosfot is how could, what would, why would,
because once
they say sit?
Once he gore chops in, that's what he doesn't want to say. Sit. No, he says, Rav Yosef bringing in Chavez. Wow, and we're circumventing the whole issue with this other, you know, statement about it'll only be Mechal Shabbos for people that are Shomer Shabbos. But the implication otherwise is that Rabbi Yosef is suggesting that Ava would have been enough to override even a Daraisa. Tosfos doesn't want us to think that. Tosfos says,
right,
don't learn it.
According to Tosfos, what's the Hiddush of Rabbi Yosef then?
Right, so the addition.
That's a good question.
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, in other words, I know already I can do Ava for the Durbana and the Durbana of Zar. So what's he adding? Because the Durbana of Shabbos?
Still different.
Far worse. Far worse. And this is going to be really important. I'm glad you said this. It's going to be very important when we get to the philosophy of this. And Rav Unterman's approach is going to be very much focused on the very significant nature of Chil Shabbos. So it's going to come back big time. So yeah, it's his whole Torah to understanding this in an ethical, moral way. So we'll come back to it.
Are we staying with the definition that this Tosfos is that we're talking about, this Tosfos?
No, so Tosfos says you can't. It must be that we're not involved in that. It must be that the baby's already released. Right?
So
the situation is that it's only a Durabana at most. It's a Durabanan or nothing. So there's a Machlokas Rishonim, which it is. So some Rishonim are going to say you can't even be Mechal Shabbos Durabanan because of Eva. You only could do very limited things. And others say no, all Durabanans. Right? Whichever one that is, I think we're going to go with cool all the ways. But the bottom line is, Rock Rover says Eva doesn't do a thing for us.
Eva doesn't do a thing for this Durabanan.
Yeah. But that's not enough to me. I mean, most of what we do, a ton of Durabanan. Everything's Daraisa all over the place. Right? We never got to do it. It's that whole outline. But there's Daraisa in the beeper and driving and all the machinery that you're getting. There's Daraisa writing. There's Daraisa all over the place. So Ava's not going to do it for me, so we have to figure out what it is. So take a look. You need to see this Mishnah Berurah. It's really fascinating. Historical Mishnah Berurah, page 2. I just want to get at least halfway through this. This is the Mishnah Berurah's formulation of our halacha. Look what he writes. Just unbelievable. Halacha base. So he quotes the halacha, Kusis in Yavim Osov Shabbos. Quotes the Mishnah. And the conclusion of the Quran. You are not allowed, and here he's going well beyond the Avodah Zarah, it seems. He's saying a Kusis, you cannot, on Shabbos, right? If we're talking about Chol, you certainly can't deliver any non-Jew. Right? Because that, the whole halacha is limited to real Ovid Avodah Zarah.
So that you can't do that?
That you're allowed to do. You can't, someone who's mamish Ovid Avodah Zarah, you shouldn't be delivering them. So that's a problem with Hindus.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah,
it still exists.
That is a good question.
That's
a problem. And then if you hold to Catholicism, is it also Avodah Zarah? We'll have to see.
That's a big problem.
Ava will get us out of it. Ava will get us out of it. Right? Still use Ava for this. That's only a dinner upon her. I mean, Shabbos, in theory.
What about Shabbos, then?
But Shabbos, first of all, it's not limited to Ovid Avodah Zarah, right? Should be any non-B'nai Bris. Kusis does not mean Omid Elazar necessarily, right?
What is it?
Kusis is an expression that is being is getting from the Gemara. But we'll see, if you look at the Bir Halacha, take a look at the Bir Halacha now. Bir Halacha is on the right side there. He explains that a Kusis doesn't mean Dafka, someone who is a Kusis, but it means Yishma'elis and a Ger Toshav. The Mishnah Berurah himself is going out of his way to point out, you should realize this big chumra that I'm saying, that the Mechaber is saying, applies to the most highest level non-Jews there are. A Muslim and a Ger Toshav is as good as they get, right? They're the next best thing to being Jewish, because they're not Omid Avodah Zarah, they're monotheists, they're ethical, they're practically all following Shemitz they know of, right? A good Muslim really is doing it. And a Ger Toshav, by definition, is doing it. Here are my great non-Jews. And he wants you to realize, we don't mean here Avodah Zarah, we mean everybody. And it's going to even get harsher. Take a look what the Mishnah Berurah himself says in Ches. Kusis eni yaldim, v'afilu b'schar. And even for money, we don't. The v'chol yaldim mishum eva, right? On chol, eva would be enough to do it for money, because of the din of giving birth to a ovid of Zerah has no application because of eva. K'nevuah b'yoredeya, but hacha asur. But here, in this case, it's going to be asur. Why? Mishum b'yachol l'ishtamet. He's quoting the Gemara because you could say there's no Eva in the case of Shabbos, because you just say, he's quoting the Gemara, it's unbelievable. For the Mishnah Berurah, there was no problem to say, I cannot deliver you on Shabbos, because I can only deliver people that are Shomer Shabbos. Because of Hamagen Avraham, v'makom de'ika v'micha sh'le'eva v'amakai v'amla shari imen v'chilu. So Magen Avraham said, but if there is really Eva, let's say you can't say that statement and get away with it. Like none of us think you could. So Magen Avraham says, then Mishum Eva, you could do things as long as there's no Chilul Shabbos. Veda, here's where the Mishnah Berurah goes off in the biggest anti-MD tirade I've ever heard from. He says, Veda, the harofim afilo hayoser sherim. He says, the most kosher doctors, you know what they're doing? They're not careful about this whole din. The masim b'chol Shabbos, every Shabbos we see, no sin, they're going out, they're breaking the laws of Tchum, they're doing all sorts of little Shabbos in order to take care of them, they're problem. The kosvin, the shochachin, some of them, they're making medications, they're doing Yisrael Darais when they make the medications, right? And they're doing all these things, and they think that they're okay because of the Eva, but absolutely not. And he ends with Hashem Yishmerenu. That all us doctors that we meet, he's telling me, I'm a big Machal Shabbos, Hashem Yishmerenu.
Don't take it personal.
I couldn't believe it. He's like, oh my God, he's such a soft, gentle person. And he's telling me that I'm an absolute Machal Shabbos, Hashem Yishmerenu, in the strongest of terms. Now, does everyone notice the little asterisk?
Yeah.
What's that all about? And I will tell you that I purposely put in, this is a very old edition of the Mishnah Berurah. In the current editions of the Mishnah Berurah, you will not find this. This little asterisk. What does the asterisk say?
Certain countries where they're still Oved
Vachavim. Right. It says, you know what I mean by Oved Vachavim? The Medinot India. Sha'ad hayom ha'umos hem Oved Vachavim ha'mazalos. What is that little amendation doing? It's showing that the time himself was worried, or at least the person who edited this book was worried. The Chafetz Chaim didn't put that in there. How do we know for a fact that he's not limiting it to Hindus?
Talking about Christians.
Because he himself said in the Bir Halacha, it's Muslims included, Ger Toshav's included. So obviously, this is not an emendation that the Chafetz Chaim himself made. Someone else made it. Why'd they make it? They're scared of the ones. Something like this in print, that I'm not allowed to take care of a Muslim or a Ger Toshav on Shabbos. So that's going to come back to be very significant. Because what are you worried about? What do you have to put that in there? What might they be worried about? What are they worried about? Yeah, more than anyone. There's repercussions. There's real repercussions of these kinds of things.
Isn't that like the end all result of this?
And we're going to see. There's going to be two approaches. One of them is going to be that one. One approach is going to be that if we really started adhering to this halacha, there would be sakanas nefashos in Klal
Yisrael. Is that what Eva is?
No. Actually, this section I'm moving out. Eva is just sin's failure.
Yeah, which leads
to not because of fear of killing. It just bases hatred. We don't want people to hate us.
This would be seen as
very different. Very different. A person can hate you, but they're not going to kill them. Here we're worried about they're going to kill them.
But we see that when we go direct to the Torah, we see that they only give attention to the Torah. But here, he makes a big leap without saying why we should differentiate between us and.
Well, it's not such a big leap because the Mishnah was talking about Dako and Tzvavin. When it's talking about the weekday halacha. Once we threw Shabbos into the mix, what's the difference? We're talking about
Shabbos. Do we see them jump, going from a different problem to Rambam?
In the times of the Gemara?
Yes. No, in the Gemara over here. We didn't see them changing.
Right. Well, the Gemara wasn't so concerned. There were no Muslims to be concerned with. And there was the majority of non-Jews were over the Lazara. That's why it's always going to be phrased that way.
But
who was not only the Bazaar, the Talmud Gemara? So Christianity had begun, but there weren't a prevalency and significance to them. And then there was this Gertoshev group, right? So, yeah, the Gemara didn't go out of its way to say we're including them, but I can give you a very reasonable explanation. You don't need to flip to discuss them.
What's the group?
99% of the non-Jews are only the Bazaar.
But again, if someone is a crook, it's obvious why that person should be kept to the side, and we consider it a crook to be a crook. But someone who's geared should be righteous, why should we punish them for being born?
Right, so your assumption is we're punishing.
Well, that's not saving life.
All right, so we have to explain it, but I will maintain that it is not a punishment. That's what we have to try to express why it's not.
So you don't see it as someone
doing
you wrong if they don't save your life?
We'll talk about it.
Along those lines a little bit, do we in Judaism have an issue with saving the lives of like a murderer or a rapist or like someone who has
like a Jew or non-Jew? And not on Shabbos, you mean like just plain?
I'm saying plain straight up.
Right, so good, I'm glad you asked that because this is going to speak to you a little bit. What you said or what I'm about to say. Ask me this. What if I have a Jew who's Michal Shabbos, who's an Apikaris? Am I allowed to be Michal Shabbos for him?
Well, according to what we said before, we said
the mice, but I'm saying Mikra Adin, like over here. In other words, the same rule that applies to non-Jews Mikra Adin applies to Jews that are Apikaris.
Well, we said it.
We see that it's not a racial statement. Right?
But I'm talking outside of religion. I'm talking like modern day. Ethics.
Right. So somebody, I'll answer your question now. So somebody who's let's say a convicted murderer, a gavra katila. Right. So there's a significant opinion that you cannot be Michal Shabbos there because they're dead. You're saving the life of a dead person. No point.
Isn't that only going to Jews?
He's asking me Jewish law.
So what do you do with the Hippocratic Oath? Like, is there
the Maisim. We'll be able to take care of that Maisim. The Hippocratic Oath doesn't mean anything.
Is it going to be the same answer as
a little different. You'll see there's little differences. I'll give you this.
It's not going to be Ava either, though, right?
Definitely not going to be Ava. Ava has no application to Jews, right? What it's going to be is the.
No, I'm saying a non Jew also, though. I'm saying for this, you get a convicted rapist or murderer coming in and he's injured on Shabbos. Ava's not going to be the answer.
No.
Okay.
No, you don't. Why do I care if the convicted rapists hate me? What do I care if
it's not them that you're worried about, it's the rest of the world that sees you as violating the Hippocratic Oath and.
I hear you, Jess.
That is an issue. How is that
an issue? It's not an issue. It's not going to affect the Jews as a whole. It's going to affect an individual doctor who might lose his license.
I disagree.
But
I think that we're all representatives of Jews.
Anyone who wears a yarmulke doesn't matter.
It could be a chiddush.
It could be a huge chiddush.
Sorry, that would be.
Nobody owns your license, but nobody's going to lose their license.
Number one, I'm telling you, at the end of the day, practice speaking.
So,
treat everyone
from either.
It's not
even
not doing
a job. Anytime you wear a yarmulke,
I have it. We'll get to it. Let's just do a little more so we could jump right in and finish up on Wednesday. Let's go. All right. What I'm going to do is tell you that, take a look on the next page. We're going to summarize this and end with this. We're going to get right into the happy ending, and now we just have to explain. The happy ending is on this page over here. What page number is it?
Page 3.
Right away, the puppet's time, Mishver's approach is attacked by everybody, right? But with strong language. The Igros Moshe says that it's a Pella. He can't for the life of him understand how the Chafetz Chaim could say what he said. He says, just, it's ridiculous to think that we would ever respond, well, we'll only take care of people that are Shomer Shabbos, and not take care of you that are B'chal Shabbos. He says, wrong total. And all the other poskim follow suit. Rav Avadya Yosef has much to say about this, right? The first one to disagree is on the bottom, the Divrei Chaim. The Divrei Chaim mentions that in his time already, right, this is the Sanzer Rebbe, in his time already, somewhere around 1700s, 1800s, it was already that most people were being Mechal Shabbos with good halachic permission, even for non-Jews, even on the races. And the question becomes, what was the basis of the Hantar? So what we're going to quickly discuss on Wednesday, because we're going to stop, is there are two approaches to the Hetzer. Two approaches on how this Hetzer developed. Because everything the Chafetz Chaim was saying is true to Ikar Adin. Bottom line is that when you finish through Shas, you come out, and Shas tells you you cannot be Mechal Shabbos for anyone other than a Jew. Okay? So now, we still have to understand the philosophy behind that. But before we get to that, let's just understand why, practically speaking, it's not going to stop us. And it doesn't have any limitation on us. That'll be our other practical consideration. So we're going to answer that up on Wednesday with two approaches. There's what Rav Avadya Yosef uses, the Sephardic approach, and there's the Ashkenazic approach with Moshe Feinstein, Hasid Sofer, and Rov B. Yosef. We'll do the whole Shkaf thing.